Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we are going to be discussing aspects of life. How can you make your life richer, fuller, and better? My guest, Steve Elder, has a book that he's put out titled, How Much More Longer? How to Get Real About How You Want to Live the Life You Really Want. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Donna. Appreciate you having me.
I'm always intrigued with the way people's lives evolve. You have been a financial advisor. You're involved in speaking. You do coaching. You're a family man. You work with different kinds of business people. What made you sit down to write a book?
It's a great question. It really was born out of a lot of pain, frankly. I had told my story a lot in really speaking sort of informally, but had been asked several times over the years in different formats. And I had just lost my grandfather, who was a really key person in my life, and was raising two teenagers, which is, for anybody that's done that, a really challenging thing. And being in the financial services business, the markets were dive bombing in a way that we hadn't seen in a generation. And all of that just sort of conspired to have me sit down and begin to put down my story on nights that I couldn't sleep. And I really didn't set out to write a book, frankly. I sat down to do just that, to put my story on paper for my kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that through the teaching and the speaking and some coaching that I had been through, about a third of the way through, I've got something here that's worth sharing. It's on paper, the things that I've counseled people on, and in every area. You'd mentioned all the diverse areas and everything that I'd done, and it just sort of turned into this thing where I just could not stop. And I went through about a 9-month period of writing where I literally couldn't, I just couldn't put it down, and that's really how it evolved.
You make a comment in your book that you feel, and this is right in the beginning, that one very important aspect that seems to be missing in so many people's lives, in your professional observation, is community. And I thought when I read those words, that is very, very true. Today we've entered into a world where technology seems to be reigning supreme, and there's an isolationist patterning that is taking place in the lives of people. And having been involved in media for so many years, I know how important media is, but people are isolating themselves from the connecting, the support that they can have when they're out involved in one way or another. And you say, we are not engaged, we haven't grabbed our purpose and our heart, hanging on to it like our life and our living depended on it. And it does.
Mm-hmm.
Those are very strong words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've just found in my own life, it really was a lesson learned on my own, as we typically do. We can be taught things, but we have to learn, and again, learn many times through pain. And I was in a community of guys that began to get together every week now probably 12, 13 years ago, and it took a long time. We were all friends, but it took a long time for us to really begin telling the truth about what was going on in our lives. And, we were all in leadership in different forms, in business or out in the community, or sometimes in both. And it was fascinating to me to sit back, and I participated in that. It took 2-3 years for me to begin to come forward with, here's what my real fears are, here's what I really want, here are the desires of my heart. And it was fascinating to me that people who called themselves friends could come together and begin to get together in more intimate settings and more meaningful settings.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it took a long time for us to really begin to be able to tell the truth to one another. And what we found in doing that is that not only were our lives changed, but we felt freer. We were freer. Just to be able to take the demons and skeletons out of the closet and give them some light and let people really know, hey, here's what's going on. I don't have it all figured out. I'm not perfect. And so it really addicted me to community and to being buried into real relationships. It impacted everything. It impacted my marriage. It impacted my business. You know, I began talking to clients even very differently rather than sitting back and, you know, if I was coaching, being all coachy. That's one of my favorite words. Instead of being all coachy, to talk real, you know, to say, mm-hmm. hey, here's what's going on with me. Here's what I've learned through this. Here's what I hear you saying. And people are really caught off guard, I think, by loving frankness to really, because somebody has taken an interest in them and is really hearing what it is that they have to say and able to get to a deeper level. And I think the only way we do that is through community and loving people and allowing them to love us and to know who we really are rather than just continuing on with facades and trying to be someone that we think we're supposed to be, but not necessarily someone that we really are. My daughter now is 21. When she was younger, she was interviewing for a position she really desired, and she called me and told me how nervous she was going into it. And I made a comment to her that I have used over and over, and when I said it, I thought, oh, that is right in the center of what I want to teach. And my advice to her was, look, don't ever be anything other than exactly who you are, because mm-hmm. who you are is enough. And it sounds a little bit cliche, but it's, boy, we need to hear that. If something or someone is not a fit for us because we're showing our authentic selves, then so be it.
Mm-hmm.
And if it ends up coming our way, then that was what was meant to be. And that's where we need to live, is right in the stream of the things that are supposed to be.
That is a very important lesson to learn. And I think that it's so hard because you have social paradigms, you have family dictums, you have career environments that say this is protocol, this isn't. And I'm not just talking about the yes ma'am, yes sir, no ma'am, no sir type of thing. The basic sense of etiquette, that's something everybody should learn. But to really be who you are, that is a process. I don't know about anybody else. It takes guts to even be willing to explore that, number one. And number two, to be comfortable in your own skin honestly takes some living, in my observation. I don't know of anybody that gets there without having bumped into a few boulders that have rolled on top of them sometimes and made them feel like they were nothing more than a limp pancake. But it is something I think that life is about, is learning how to be comfortable with our assets, our warts, and everything else in between.
Well, you know, I use that process, what you just explained, an awful lot, not only throughout the book, but throughout everything that I do. Again, it impacts. I know what I'm good at. I have about four or five useful skills, and everything else I'm terrible at.
Sounds like me.
That's really what it boils down to. I am. I can't fix anything. I was outside under a car hood one day, and my son, when he was about 13, came outside and saw me in the garage, and I heard his tennis shoes squeak to a halt, and I looked up, and he had both hands in the air and said, please step away from the automobile. It will never function again. So that's my reputation as it relates to mechanical things.
I'm that way with computers.
yeah, I, and I'm, so am I, by the way. That's another place where I'm not very good. So I just, you know, We tend to, you know, we hear so much that we need to work on our weaknesses. One of the first jobs that I had, there was a person involved in an organization who talked all the time about identifying your weaknesses and working on those. How can we work on those? And it took me several years. Like you said, it's a process to go, you know what? I have gifts that are strong enough in these areas where if I'm just good at those, I don't need to be good at these other things. There are other people gifted at that. Or, you know, so you're right. It is a process. It's not, you know, a self-help, answer these four questions and you're fixed. It's not
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
But I identified early in my life some experiences that I went through where it was like, you know, I thought I wanted that so bad, and what I really wanted was to not fail.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't about I want that so bad. It was about being afraid of looking bad. And I just decided, you know, I want to chase my own heart. I want to chase my own dreams. I learned very early through an accident that I was in, that, you know, life can be taken away, life can be changed very quickly, and I want to be in the places where I enjoy and where my giftedness and my effectiveness is at work. I don't want to spend time in the areas of weakness, and I don't want to spend time, and that applies to relationship, it applies to career, it applies to everything. I want to be able to, again, work on my gifts with people, and we all have them. It's just a matter of identifying what those are. And generally, I think we know what they are. We know what we're good at. We know where we're effective.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just having the guts to stay in that place.
There are some wonderful stories you share about that experience in 1984, I believe it was. It turned your life around.
Right.
And then you go into your growing up periods during college, and of course, I think the letter S is stamped on every young person's head. Excuse me, young people, if you're listening. This is not because I don't think you have brains in your head. I think just about everybody in their teenage years, later teenage years and early 20s, you can have the S for stupid to be right up there because I had it on my forehead. I didn't want to acknowledge it, but it's there. We really do dumb things many times when we're younger because we just don't have an awareness that there's going to be consequences to certain actions. And again, that's not put down. Everybody has to grow through that. Maybe there's a few out there that for some reason have the wisdom of the universe in their head and they're using it, but I don't know of many. I just think it's part of what it takes to grow up. But I love this one story, and actually I liked a lot of your stories. There was one story about a couple that you had in your chapter, What Is It That You Really Want, and how they were asked by their kids to take care of their financial problems. And they said no. And I thought, this is really a good story, because I liked her response. She said that she and her husband had thought about it and determined that the struggle is sweet. And the places where they had learned and where they really became close as a couple were when they were going through tough times. And she said she didn't want to rob her children, her adult children, of those experiences. And I thought, what wisdom? What wisdom?
It's really true. In having dealt with people's money, that's about as emotional as things get over time, and there's a lot tied up in it. And it really was a stunning comment when she said it to me, and I told her, hey, I'm going to use that a lot. I can
mm-hmm.
tell at the moment. Because it really encapsulated a lot of the things that I could look back and say the very same thing about my life, and you could yours. I think it's a common experience.
Mm-hmm.
Where I learned, where I grew into people, was generally when things weren't going real well. You know, if things are just going great, do we really grow in the community like we talked about earlier? Do we really grow personally? Do we change? Do we... You know, all of those things, we aren't typically very dynamic if we're really comfortable. You know, you have to, in fact, to get to the place of comfort financially or otherwise, you have to appreciate it and to really fully enjoy it. You have to have gone through the pain. And she identified that. And I
mm-hmm.
think that's one of the most difficult things as a parent, which is why I admired that so much. Is we want to prevent pain for people so much. We want to fix things. And we have to understand, hey, where did I learn? You know, if I could point to the three great areas where I learned what was going on in my life when I did, And I think it takes great courage to step out of the way and allow someone to go through some pain that perhaps you could prevent, but in the long term, nothing's going to be learned from it.
Absolutely.
It was great wisdom, yeah.
I just love that story. And then there was another one in your book, and you have it in your chapter called Hiding, about a little boy visiting his grandparents, and he had a slingshot. Would you share that story? I think that is an extremely powerful story because it talks about a wisdom that is wise for anyone to absorb.
Yeah. Well, the paraphrasing of the story is simply that a little boy goes out and kills an animal, and the sister sees it, and she's holding that over his head with the grandmother, and the grandmother saw the whole thing and is just letting things play out, again, sort of to the point that you were talking about earlier, allowing to stand back and see what would develop and see how people would react, and as a result of that, he was forced into a lot of her chores, and she just sort of stepped back and said, "You go ahead and do that, or I'm going to tell." And he allowed that to happen over and over and over. And again, he buried those fears, and he was hiding his shame and hiding what had happened to him or what he had done and how much guilt he was carrying around. And we all do that. We all carry around shame and guilt, and we have the thought, I think, several times a week, I find with people that they think they're terrible human beings for something that when it's revealed is not that big a deal. And ultimately, that's the point of the story. He finally couldn't take it anymore, and he came forward and he confessed. And the grandmother looked at him and said, "I wondered how long you would allow yourself to be a slave to her for what you had done."
It's an amazing thing.
Yeah, it really is, and that is really the point of the title. When I titled the book, I had editors fighting. Some loved it, some didn't, but it is my son's question, his version of, "Are we there yet, Daddy?" was how much more longer when he was 2 and 3 years old, and it always got us really tickled, and I thought that encapsulated the book so well because my question really is, how much longer are you going to allow yourself to be that way, to be a slave to your fears, to be a slave to who you think you're supposed to be, not to chase the desires of your heart? And I think that's the central question throughout the book, and I really do think it is for modern life, for again, the reasons that we've mentioned earlier.
And every generation has to face it. No one is exempt from those realities. There was a very special man in your family that you called Pop, and his story, I think, is quite significant. Your children were in their later teen years when you wrote this book, and you said, "Isn't it funny how we always look to the future and our hopes for it, but we walk right by what is straight away in front of us?" Tell us about Pop.
Oh, gosh. Well, I grew up in an idyllic sort of setting out in the country in rural West Tennessee, and he lived up on a hillside, and we were right down below him, and there was a creek that separated it, and there was a bridge we walked across that he built with his hands, and he was a 10th grade educated man who had great and simple wisdom. And growing up my entire life, through college, next door to him, I got to hear a lot of that wisdom. I got to share a lot of his humor, and I got to see that there wasn't Confucius wisdom in him, but there were things to learn if you just watched. And I guess the primary thing that I learned from him was that love was time and action. He was at every baseball game, every ball game, really, that I ever played. He had a shop that he had built by hand down below his house, and there were great pine trees there, and we would sit under those after we had been working and would just talk, not even necessarily about anything meaningful, just, "Hey, what's going on?" We'd talk about what we had done that day, whatever. But he was just always there, and he was an incredibly special man, and a special patriarch, has a a great extended family, and he learned lessons very in a very difficult way when he was earlier. I do like to point out, I came home to him, or I came home to my father one day who had just come in from work, and my dad was being real hard on me for some things, and I had shared that with Pop, and he told me, "Son, don't worry about your dad. He's just being too hard on you." So I came home and shared that with my father, that his father said I was being too hard on him and he ought to back off of me. And he proceeded to tell me, "You don't know what you're talking. If you knew who that man was 30 years ago," and proceeded to tell me stories. So that didn't go over real well. One time that I tried to use Pop to my advantage, it probably, you know, I probably shouldn't have done that. Probably shouldn't have played that card, Donna.
I understand.
Yeah, he was a very special man, and impacted. You know, he has impacted my children because he impacted what type of father that I would be. It's amazing how that gift continues to give, and I know it will impact my kids in terms of how they parent. And I've been very out loud with them about the things that I learned from him and the way that relationship ought to look. And sometimes it involves tough love, but a lot of times it just involves hanging out and being together and enjoying exactly the moment that you have right now, because it can be taken away very quickly.
Very true. Steve, this month we're going to be celebrating Father's Day, and I think that this story and the others that you share in your book are really some examples of the value that a father has in the role of family. And I'm so glad you did take the time to write this book, because I feel that so often we don't hear enough from the fathers in the world. They may think, well, this is, you know, it's not manly to talk about things like this, but it is important. And the father role in the family is really, really valuable. Mom has her responsibilities. We live in a world that's so complex today, not that it hasn't been in the past in its own manner, but in today's world, we get pummeled, and you bring this out in the book. Media pummels us with information repetitiously over and over and over and over and over again, and there is so little that is said about people that are really out there in the world fighting and battling, and I'm not saying we shouldn't be aware of the negative things in life. They're there. But we have to realize that we have to be, using your word, engaged in life, taking care of our own space, being where we are with full attention, and understanding that that sense of community really does make a difference. And I know that that's the truth. I have seen that demonstrated so many times. And I think that your book just brings out such very, very good messages that really touches the heart as well as the mind.
Well, thank you for that, and I sure hope so. It was written with a great degree of when you write something or you create something or you tell something that is truly from the heart, it's an exhilarating but an exhausting process.
It is.
Oh, my goodness. I've never been as exhausted as when I finished that book. That is the truth. And but I do appreciate you saying that. And you know, really, we all have the good in us. We do. But we need to be led along the way. And this is not, if I could for a second, sort of explain this. I am not a big self-help book person myself.
Mm-hmm.
And this gets pigeonholed that way a lot, but I hope that it's something different. I hope it's more inspirational. That's a different word to me. I hope that it's more challenging. I ask a lot of questions in the book that really cause people to peer inward. It's really amazing to me, and the greatest compliment that I can get, the feedback that I've gotten. People will share with me, they'll email, or I'll see people, you know, here in town that have been to book signings or whatever and have gotten phone calls, and I'll ask the same question every time, tell me the central thing you got out of it. And I have not gotten the same answer yet.
Amazing.
One of the best answers, it really is, and one of the best answers I got was from a business person here in town, and she shared, when I asked that question, she just stopped and sighed real heavily and paused for about 10 seconds, and she said, "The biggest thing I learned is I'm not alone."
Mm-hmm.
And I needed to know that.
Mm-hmm.
And just that knowledge, oh my, I'm not ill. I am not crazy. That everybody is struggling with the same, you know, sort of common thing. The circumstances are different, but we're all struggling with how to love and how to balance and how much work and how much money is enough and how much, you know, and what, how do I enjoy what's in front of me? How do I chase and pursue those things that I know that I'm called to, that are my purpose?
Mm-hmm.
They're all valid. And it's amazing to me that it's evidence that there's a teacher somewhere else, because I am amazed by sometimes the reaction that I get from people in terms of what they got out of the book is not what I wrote at all.
Mm-hmm.
But they learned, which is really the essence of coaching, they learned their own lesson. That it spoke to them exactly where they are today. And it hit them right where they live today. And it's not even necessarily what my intended message was, but they got something that was meaningful and enacted change in their life. And that's as much fun as I can have in terms of the feedback that I get.
Well, Steve, I'll tell you what, anybody that can recommend Porch Time in my book has a great deal of wisdom. And for those of you that wonder about that, of course, those of you that are listening from the East Coast or the South, you know all about it, because you typically have porches, and that's very much a culture, especially in the southern area of the United States and in certain areas of the Midwest, where people will sit out on their porches in their rocking chairs, and they just will stay there. And that was tradition, because it would get very warm, and people would get to talk to their neighbors when they'd walk by. And porch time, as you describe it, is getting in touch with yourself. Your book is very, very, very good reading, and your stories that you have put in, your experiences, I think it would touch the heart and mind of just about anybody who would read it. But more than that, I think that the message that our life is so much more than living in paradigms that perhaps are not ours to live. In other words, they're not our truth. They're not really who we are.
That's right.
And I think that that is very, very profound, and it's important to be able to understand that we have the right and privilege to choose a different way, if necessary. Steve Elder, what is your website that people can go to, please?
It's www.elder, E-L-D, as in David, E-R, speaks, elderspeaks.com. And you can find information there. I write a monthly newsletter. You can sign up for that. There's information about the book and also speaking engagements. There's booking information on there for that as well.
Wonderful. How much more longer? The title based on something that his son would say to him frequently. Steve Elder has taken those words that his son would express and has put them into a title of a book, and the book itself is loaded with a lot of insight and wisdom about how you can get real about living now, the type of life you really want. Steve Elder, thank you very much for being my guest today. It's been a delight having you, and I wish you continued success with your next book when it comes out.
Thank you, Donna. It's my pleasure. I appreciate being here.
It's been a delight. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. When we come back, we'll have more good things to share with you. So don't go away. Steve Elder, How Much More Longer? Check it out. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. Four out of the last eight Nobel Prizes in Physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.DelphiInternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. We're back, and the phone line is open. If you wanted to give me a buzz and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, please do give me a call at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Okay, I wanted to share with you something that Thomas Edison said. I came across this just before the show, and I thought, I like this. I'm going to share this with you because it sure does have a whole different mentality of thought than what a lot of people have today. Here's what Thomas Edison said. I'm wondering what would have happened to me if some fluent talker had converted me to the theory of an 8-hour day and convinced me that it was not fair to my fellow workers to put forth my best efforts in my work. I'm glad that the 8-hour day had not been invented when I was a young man. If my life had been made up of 8-hour days, I do not believe I could have accomplished a great deal. This country would not amount to as much as it does if the young men of 50 years ago had been afraid that they might earn more than what they were paid for. Think about that for a minute. How many times are we indoctrinated into the mental concept of I deserve XYZ? And boy, at 5 o'clock, I'm out of here. Boom, gone. And it could be any time of the day. It really is fascinating to me that when people choose to get into a business for themselves, they very soon realize that it's a 24/7 job. You have to learn how to manage your time to the best of your capacity. But many, many days will be worked where you're not going to be compensated for your time, but you do the job because that's what you have to do. When you get into a mentality of just so many hours and that's it, you're not going to get any more out of me, it's a sad commentary of what I call the work ethic. People that I have known through the years that have what I consider a work ethic say, this is what I have to do and this is what I will do so I get the job done. It's a really interesting patterning that has evolved through the years. Now, if you're in a job where you absolutely hate it, then maybe you need to start a hobby of some kind that engages your skills and talents so that you're going to feel good about your time investment in that. But just bellyaching about something, oh, this isn't fair, blah, blah, blah. We are responsible for being able to make our environments the way we want them to be. And if you're wanting to have your own business, or you really want to have that level of independence, then I'd say start investigating what you want to do. I'll guarantee you that most people who are considered successful put in a lot of time, effort, and energy that many times they are not compensated for. They do it because they want to do it. It is something that we need to have a sense of personal pride. If you were going to go and give a talk somewhere, you're not going to just go up, and especially if you're speaking before a large group of people, you're just not going to go up and wing it by the seat of your pants unless you're called up at the last minute. If you're going to do something, you must be prepared. Compensation will come to you as your skills increase. Let me share a story with you that was told to me many years ago, and it really registered. It was about a woman that went to a Japanese artist. This artist was renowned for his skill in working with certain designs, and his execution was so excellent. His reputation was just phenomenal. This woman decided she wanted to have one of his pieces of art. So she makes a trip to Japan, visits him, and she says, I want to have an original of your work. The gentleman said, wonderful. He discussed what she enjoyed, etc. And then he proceeded to do the art right in front of her. It didn't take him very long, maybe a couple of hours. She watched him do all of this. He hands the finished piece to her and tells her that it was $250,000. She said, you only worked on this for 2 hours. And yet she had just been in awe of what he had done in that 2 hours. He said, I'd like to show you something. Would you come with me, please? And she said, all right. So she follows him into another room. He walks over to a wall closet. He slides the doors to the side. In the closet, she sees floor-to-ceiling papers. She doesn't know what she's supposed to see when she's looking at this closet stuffed with these papers. He turned to her and he said, what you saw me do in 2 hours, all of this that's in front of you, is what it took for me to become the accomplished artist I've become. What you're paying for is not that single piece of paper. What you're paying for are the years that it took me to gain that skill. She paid him his $250,000. Now, that may sound rather awesome to you, but it's a story about value. When someone is really skilled and they're very, very good at what they do, and they respect what they do, and they've spent perhaps most of their life accomplishing that, you don't want to nitpick over the small stuff. She paid him and had a story to share to boot. This is Donna Sebo. Telephone number, if you want to give me a call, is 888-815-9756. Well, I've got to tell you what we've got coming up tomorrow. Uncle Al Capone, yes, the man who is just reviled in history books. He supposedly was behind the St. Valentine Massacre that just about every American kid hears about at one time or another. Well, we're going to find out the truth. That's right. We're going to be talking to Deidre Capone tomorrow. Her uncle, Al Capone. Well, she's got some stories to tell that I think are going to surprise you. So we're going to have Deidre on tomorrow. And then on Friday, Lucinda Messer is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about powerful medicine, and that is vitamin D. We're hearing a lot about omega-3s, omega-6s, and all kinds of different things in between. Well, vitamin D has been known about for a long time. It's being rediscovered with a new understanding. So Lucinda will be sharing that with us. By the way, if you want to check on any of the guests and what's coming up on the Donna Sebo Show, when you're listening to this show, you can always go over to show information and you'll find out more about what is going to be coming up. And if you have a special story, by the way, I want to mention this to you. If you have a special story or something you feel that I should be aware of, go ahead and send me an email. Send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna at DelphiInternational.com. And then we'll be able to put it aside and perhaps share it on air. And I think that that's always a good thing to do. And I always enjoy hearing from you, by the way. Again, 888-815-9756 is the telephone number to call in. Wally Amos has been a guest on my show more than once, and I just think he is just a fine, fine man. I met him many years ago at a book function, and through the years, I've been getting different things from him, and of course, he's published some books, and he's got a wonderful food line that has been developed. But I really liked his story that he had. He puts together small articles for different publications. And after chatting with Steve Elder today and his wonderful book, How Much More Longer, this particular commentary by Wally Amos I thought was very, very good. He said, how often do we put things aside because they don't seem to be that important, like remembering friends? Or apologizing when maybe we've made an error in judgment. It's a pretty tough thing to learn how to do. Now, Wally said, I learned how to do this, and he's very good at it. If he makes a mistake, he tells people he's made a mistake. He apologizes for it. Now, he said it was a short time ago that a former friend, a former working associate in show business, met up with him and said, remember we had known Mr. So-and-so. I found out he's dying from cancer. Well, Andy said, mentally, he made a note to make a call to the friend, but he said, every once in a while, he'd pop back into my head, but I got sidetracked and I never made the call. Well, he made the call on this one day, and he got this former friend's voicemail. He then followed up and tried to find out how he was doing. And in the course of conversation, he found out that this friend that he had called had passed away. And he said it left him sort of empty. He said, I wished I had called on the day I decided that I should do it. He said it wouldn't have saved his life, but maybe I could have said something that would have made him laugh or given him a good feeling. And he said the call would have given me a good memory and my feeling that I would have done something that was good and worthwhile. So Wally Amos says, never put off till later what you can do now. Do it now, or it may be too late. He said W. Clement Stone was such an inspiration to him, and his wonderful motto was, do it now. Do it now. You can never turn back the hands of time, and if you live life fully in the moment, it'll prevent a lot of regrets later on. While I said, it means living your life with the feeling that each second is complete. You don't have any unfinished business. You don't want to have this, gee, I wish I had feeling. And he said he has a very good friend, Bob Goodale, who shared a wonderful idea with him, and while I said he wanted to share it with anybody that was open to listening to it, he said, I have no regrets about something I wish I'd done or could have done, and I'm not necessarily ready to leave right now. However, if my time is up, my bags are packed. So while I pose questions, how do you feel about your life? Are your bags packed? Do you have some unfinished business? Do it now. Live as if every breath is your last. One day, it will be. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break. When I come back, I'm going to talk to you about some of the oldest married people on this planet and a few other facts. This is Donna. We'll be back in just a moment.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Don. Donna, I just was absolutely astonished when I came across this information. Can you imagine being married for over 80 years? You'd think you'd have to be married at the age of 3. Well, I'll tell you what. I have in front of me a picture of a 96-year-old couple. They are Chinese. It's Zhang and Zhuo. They celebrated their marriage of 80 years, 15 days in Xiaoxiang, China, on October 23rd, 2005. They have this is just amazing. And I do not know if they're still alive, but this was a record. 80 years. They were married when they were teenagers. And they stayed together that long. And their family photo is just absolutely incredible. And they only had one child. They ended up with 3 grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren. My goodness. Can you imagine? 80 years plus. Just incredible. And then, when it comes to golf, Harold Stilson became, at the age of 101, the oldest golfer to make a hole-in-one when he landed an ace at the 16th hole at Deerfield Country Club, Florida, in May 2001. He was a 27-handicap golfer. He started playing golf at the age of 20, but he didn't make the first of his 6 holes in one until he was 71 years old. For you golfers out there, if you think your game stinks, don't give up. He really didn't make it until he was 71. And then at 101, he made a hole-in-one. Go figure. I'm telling you, it is absolutely amazing. And, you know, we're living longer and longer, so I'm sure there are going to be more stories like this in the coming years. Absolutely incredible. And I wanted to share with you something that Jerry, one of my listeners, sent me. Said, this is an exercise program for those of us whose wisdom exceeds our ambition. The doctor told me physical exercise is good for you. I know that I should do it, but my body is out of shape. So I have worked out this easy daily program. I can do it anywhere. If I can do it, you can do it. This is what you do. On Monday, you beat around the bush. You jump to conclusions, you climb the walls, and you wade through paperwork. On Tuesday, drag your heels, push your luck, make mountains out of molehills, and hit the nail on the head. Wednesday, you bend over backwards, jump on the bandwagon, balance the books, run around in circles. Thursday, you toot your own horn, climb the ladder of success, pull out the stops, add fuel to the fire. Friday, you open a can of worms, put your foot in your mouth, start the ball rolling, go over the edge. Saturday, you pick up the pieces. Sunday, going to church services should be enough. I don't know who came up with this, but I'm not showing it to my husband because he'd say, yes, it's perfectly all right with me. Oh, well, my husband is not a strong advocate of exercise. He just isn't into it. But anyway, I just thought that was so cute. I had to share it with you. Anyway, that's by Jerry. It probably will be in my next newsletter. I'll pass it along to you if you'd say, gee, I wish I had that and I could read it because that's my style. But anyway, I just like the way people think and they come up with all of these unique opportunities. Well, how about the crop circles? I know you've heard about them. I've heard about them. But there was a particular situation that occurred, well, in the month of July. In fact, it was July the 7th, 1996, where there was a crop circle that blew everybody away because it was created in 45 minutes on a Sunday afternoon in full view of a busy highway by Stonehenge. Now, this is what happened. There was a pilot flying over the sunny Wiltshire, UK countryside around 5 p.m. Now, he noticed nothing unusual in the wheat field he was flying above. There was a Stonehenge security guard and a farm worker also confirming the absence of any pattern. 45 minutes later, the pilot returned and the massive fractal patterning had appeared. Traffic was at a standstill because drivers were stopping to see this newly formed symbol that was going on right in front of their eyes. Now, this particular formation took the shape of a fractal. This fractal has a name. It's called Julia Set. It's a mathematical design used to calculate complex measurements. The design that was done in the wheat field resembled a centipede, and it measured 915 feet from head to tail and contained 151 circles. Another point of interest, the diameters of the circles rose and fell according to a mathematical sequence. Other mathematical precisions were discovered upon investigation. The largest circle, well, it was 52 feet in diameter, and it was placed at the highest point of the slightly domed field. The whole design was aligned with north and west edges. Now, something else that had this formation just absolutely, totally unique, it incorporated the golden mean, which is a logarithmic spiral like the cochlea of the inner ear. Now, the mathematics of the golden mean are part of what provides a bridge between geometry and music, and it is a representation of the unfolding of life. The ancient Greeks, they loved geometry. They called geometry frozen music. When the scientist, it was a Swiss scientist, Hans Jenny, passed sound through mediums such as water, iron filings, and spores to photograph the resulting waves, exact geometric patterns were revealed. Now, something that has been noticed, they don't know how it happens with crop circles. They just don't understand this particular point. They say that when the creation of the crop circles is going on, there's often what they call a trilling sound, T-R-I-L-L-I-N-G sound. So something energetically is creating this. But this particular crop circle took only 45 minutes to do. And a lot of people saw it happen. Fascinating stuff, at least I think so. This is Donna Sebo. I know we've run out of time. My goodness, tomorrow we're going to be talking with the niece of Al Capone. And I hope that you will join me. Tell your friends. Meanwhile, wherever you are, remember always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. Have an absolutely awesome and fabulous day or evening, wherever you might be. And I hope to see you back here tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.